when Rav Shlomo Carlebach went to Russia, this was before Russia was Russia, it was still the USSR, and religion was not allowed to be openly practiced, and this was the first time that a Jew was allowed to openly present Jewish ideas. So Shlomo kind of broke that barrier down, and he did a concert, and he figured, you know, maybe after all the brainwashing that had gone on over all those years, how many people would come to hear a Jew give a concert? Maybe 20, 50 Jews. He brought a couple of sidurim, a couple of pairs of tzitzis. He gets to Russia. The place is swamped. Hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of Russians were so thirsty to hear Shir Torah, right? Like Jared, right? And Mamish, they didn't know what to do, because at the end of the concert, you could see they just wanted to hold on to the Yiddishkeit that he was selling them, but they didn't know anything. And he had five sitters, you know? So what he started doing is he took the sitters, and each page of the sitter he would give to a different person. And say, you say this tefillah every day. You say this tefillah. That will be your connection to Yiddishkeit. And at the end of it, he didn't have any sitters left. He didn't have any pages left, you know? So he started giving away the tzitzis. At the end of that, he didn't have any tzitzis left. So he took his tefillin, not just his tefillin. His tefillin was passed down from generation to generation from his great-great-grandfather. And he gave away his own personal tefillin so that this kid could have connection to Yiddishkeit. He's about to get onto the plane, and all he's got is a kippah on his head, and a little boy comes up and says, Shlomo, what about me? He takes the kippah off of his head, and he puts it on the little boy, and he gets onto the plane. Gevalt. Then the story continues that he wanted to wear tefillin, you know, Shlomo Carlebach. So you know, he wants to borrow from this chassid, and he says, can I borrow tefillin? The chassid says, well, I'm going to give you tefillin, you don't even have a keep on your head, you're you know, a shiksa guy. So not that, obviously, most nice you would not do that, but this guy did that. And then Shlomo said, what are you talking about? There's a marshal and this Masechet, which says that if you're in a plane with the Evid, you don't have to have a keep. And he starts quoting all the sources that we're going to learn about in today's shir. And the guy, and the guy's like, oh, fine, anyways, the point is that we should all, if we get nothing else out of this shir, we should be Shlomo Yidden, understanding not just kippah, but the meaning, the deeper meaning behind kippah, what it represents, how it represents our connection with our fellow Jew. And the truth is, if any of you ever go to the Kotel, you actually have the opportunity to do this. You can, first of all, sometimes people are dancing and their keepers are falling off. So what you can do, I do this most Shabbos, and you can come with me and do it with me. You take kippah clips and you give people kippah clips so their kippahs don't fall off. You can actually help them so they don't have to be standing like this the whole time.
Or putting them up and sell it maybe later.
Or you can do that too. Or you can give your own kippah. Take an extra pair of kippah in your pocket when you go to the Kotel. Try it. Give them your kippah. 50% of the time, you'll have someone crying on the other end. When you give them their kippah, they'll be so touched. So you can have a little of Shlomo in your Friday night this Shabbos when you go down to the Kotel. It's my Shlomo challenge. And without further ado, we're going to learn about kippah in.
Where are the lights? You
sure? How are we going to read the Makaris?
What's going on?
How are we going to read the Makaris?
Sorry.
No lights? You sure?
Lights.
I'll try. Alright, guys, next time we'll try without the sources. I do believe in looking at the partner sheets.
My name is Shavuot.
Here's a plan for the next two classes. Whoa. Dedicating to kippah. Okay, we're going to talk about kippah in Chumash, the biblical understanding, kippah in Talmud, including the rationales behind kippah, kippah minag or halacha, the debate, and then finally we're going to talk about modern issues, kippah at work, kippah in the army, how big does kippah have to be?
Right, does it have to be this big, or this big, this big, this big, or this big,
right? Kippah on the basketball courts, kippah stories, and Rabbi Cardoza's challenge. That's the plan for the next two courses. Let's get started, okay?
For those of us who don't have sources, everybody so far, here, take some sources, and they're double-sided, and they don't have pages.
We only have less than 20 minutes left in this class.
You give us 27 minutes and we'll give you the world. Okay. Alright, Kevin, which is why if we don't talk so much, we can cover more, and we're gonna probably do a two-part class.
Great drop there in 90 minutes.
Alright. So where do we find a kippah in Chumash? Anybody have an idea? Don't look in the sources, that's cheap. Yeah. Sorry? Close. So you're right. We find head covering. Head covering in Chumash by the, anybody know the word? The mitznefet, which in the army means the helmet. Okay, one of the begotten of the Kohen Gadol was a head covering. So we do find the concept of head covering. But beyond that, nothing. You don't really find kippah in the Bible because they didn't wear kippahs in biblical times. Oh, there are those who would claim differently. If you look at source number one, we have the first source, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. And Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, Vayelech Haran, he went to Harana. So how is this a source for kippah? That Yaakov went to Be'er Sheva? Because would Yaakov go without a kippah? Chas v'shalom. So you could say that's a source for kippah, but that's just being silly billies. They may have worn head coverings because it was a desert and it was hot, but they didn't have kippahs as far as we know. The kippahs, that might be a mucker, but maybe not. There is an allusion to kippah. If you look in the second source, not the kippah, but to the concept of covering ourselves. When God is revealing Himself to Moshe Rabbeinu, what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? Vayaster Moshe panav, and Moshe covers his face. He sees the God's presence, and he automatically jerk reaction is to cover himself. Later, we see that Moshe Rabbeinu actually wears a mask because he's kind of, I wouldn't say ashamed, but like he has this awe of God and that. Yeah, this humility. So again, while it's not a kippah, it does introduce us to the concept of covering ourselves. I'm going to open the door for the window. It's a little stuffy. Awesome. Finally, this is actually just fascinating. Kippah in biblical times seems to have a different meaning. In the fourth source, in the story of Esther, who covers their head or their face?
Mordecai.
Not Mordecai, but Haman. Actually, Haman. Right, we have Moshe Mitznevet Haman when he is ashamed when he sees Mordechai walking with the horsey and he's so ashamed that it says Vayeshev Mordechai al Shar HaMelech v'Haman nidchav al bito avel v'chavui rosh. He is mourning and his face is covered. So it seems to be in biblical times, at least in the time of Esther, what was covering your face a sign of?
Embarrassing.
Mourning, right? Not exactly the way that we would understand it nowadays.
Was it like
the Gemara
that like his covering his face from embarrassing
because
his daughter like dumped?
Exactly. No. So he was very embarrassed. What's your name?
Gabriel,
come on. Thanks for joining. Okay, so that's that for biblical sources. I just always love going like Bible, Gemara, Halacha.
What did you say about source one? Did say like
that was just a joke. It was just having fun. Don't worry about it. He didn't actually have it. Okay. In the Talmud, however, we do have some sources which allude to the concept of kippah. Okay. So in Kiddushin Laman Aleph Amud Aleph, we say Rabbi Yehuna says Asher LaAdam Sheyelech Arba Amot BeKumas Kufa. A person may not walk with his standing upright. Now in Talmudic times, that means it's kind of walking with swag, walking like, you know, like, look at me, you're walking arrogantly. Okay? And why? God's glory fills the whole earth. So if I'm walking to kind of bring attention to myself, that's the opposite of tzniut. It's focusing on me, not God's glory, and therefore that's not okay. The next thing the Gemara says is Rav Huna Breid, Rav Yehoshua, who, by the way, where else have we heard of Rav Huna? Who remembers? What else did he do?
Rav Huna says that if there are only 9 people in the minyan, you can use the sefer Torah as your tenth.
Cool. Good to know. I didn't think of that, but you're right.
Source for Shnai Mikra.
Very good. 2 years in a row, we're quoting Rav Huna. He's also the Shnai Mikra guy. So 2 in a row. Rav Huna also says, Lo maske arba amos begiloi rosh. He would not go 4 amos, i.e. 6 feet, with his head uncovered. He would never have his head uncovered. Why? Amar Shechina Lamala Meroshi. He says, the God's presence is above my head. Probably doesn't mean that literally, but to be aware of God's presence, he came up with this crazy idea to put head covering on his head.
But why a head covering? Like, of anything that you could have come up with to signify a presence, right.
Why not, like, make an app that says, like, God's presence? Or,
I don't know. No, like, seriously, what triggered him to...
That's a very good question. Covering. It's a very good question.
Which is silly, because God isn't above you.
Right. So he isn't above you, but it does have some sort of symbolism of reminding you that perhaps God, like, my at the end of the day, I have to submit myself to a higher power. So, like, God is above you, me? I don't know exactly why Rav Huna did that, but we do have a story which talks about it. I do have a suggestion. We know that originally, what was the marker of Jewish identity? Brit Milah, for sure, but something more visible.
Sissus.
And we also know Peis came later than into
being.
No, Peis is in the Torah, but the modern day Peis. Well, the truth is, having a beard is rooted in the Torah, so that also could be a good reminder. We can have a whole another share, hopefully, another day about what Peis represents. But I would say Sissus was the marker of Jewish identity. Okay? And we know originally, guys, stick with me, originally, how was tzitzis worn?
On the outside.
On the outside, right? Today, I was on a teal with my wife, so I wore my tzitzis outside, which actually the Shulchan Aruch seems indicated a better way to wear, because it's like outwardly saying, look, I'm Jewish, tzitzis. But we know at some point in Jewish history, Jews stopped wearing four-cornered garments, and so instead of wearing tzitzis very outwardly, they made up a little garment which they wear under their shirt. Okay, so tzitzis became a less visible reminder of your Judaism. So perhaps, and this is totally just a hypothesis, perhaps people was kind of taking that place of the marker of Jewish identity of reminding a person of God's presence once tzitzis kind of faded a little bit more to the background. Again, totally a guess, I don't know, but that maybe had something.
Wait,
to
do. When did tzitzis fade though?
So I don't know, I don't exactly know historically when people stop wearing four corners on their garment. I know Rube David has a whole shear about it.
So at that point, it's possible that you have to then wear your own. Like nowadays, you possibly have to put on a four-corner garment, right?
That's a whole different shear. You don't necessarily have to put on a four-corner garment, but you fulfill a mitzvah if you do.
So they didn't. So there's a break between when they started doing that, when they stopped wearing four corners, when they started.
The question is, when do people stop wearing four-corner garments as their regular clothing? That's the real question, and I think it was a slow process, depending where. But that's a possibility. And then again, Rav Huna says, this is a nice thing to do. At this point, and based on the Gemara and Kedushin, is Kippah a law or is Kippah a nice thing to do? Based on this nice thing to do. He says, I do this. It seems to be most Jews were walking around without a Kippah on their head, but Rav Huna thinks it's a good idea. Okay. The next source is Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman, bring it up. Not that Rabbi Nachman, right? Not the Rabbi Nachman. Before him,
is there another Rabbi Nachman?
There's the original Rabbi Nachman, who we're about to read about. Okay, so in the next source, guys, page 2, it's a double-sided source sheet, so page 2. Rabbi Nachman by Yitzchak, Amar Leh. Rabbi Nachman said, Kildai Brich Ganva Hava. So basically, his mother went to some astrologers and said that he's going to be a thief. Okay? They predicted this boy of yours, his destiny is to be a thief. Have a lo shaf kate gilui roshe. Amar le kasei rishach ki heicha dadhavi alech emata ishamaya. So his mother then came up with a brilliant idea. His mother said, the astrologer said, the mother said, what do I do to make sure he doesn't become a thief? Put a visible reminder on his head to remind him to fear God. And so they put a head covering over his head. And so that's why he wore a head covering. And he prayed, of course, that, you know, that he should become an astrologer. Lo hava yada amai. He didn't know why he always had this keep on his head, but his mom told him to do it, so he did it.
We're talking about Rabbi Nachman talking about himself.
Yeah, Rabbi Nachman didn't know why he wore this thing, but his mom told him to do it. One day he was sitting. Kagares tute gikla nafel glima milave reshe dale enai chaza ledikla alme yatsre salik upaske the kibura bishine. Because our time is short, I'm just going to say it outside a lot of Aramaic words. But basically, he saw a tree, a date tree. He knew it wasn't his dates, right? It was stealing. But his kippah fell off his head, and he jumped up to the tree, and he, you know, grabbed the dates in his teeth, and he started like chewing the dates. They're actually delicious. They have a lot of sugar. Anyways, he stole. Why? Because his kippah fell off of his head. Okay, that's the story. So again, according to this source, what is the rationale behind kippah? What does kippah do for us? Yes.
It's a conscious
kind of. It's not the same thing.
Actually, I'm already the opposite.
Okay, wait. Well, one at a time. We're hearing consciousness, similar to the first answer, that it's raising our awareness of God. Okay, but other opinions or. Don't stray after your eyes. It's keeping your head in the game, not focused. Okay.
Could you say that, like, if your kippah fell off and you see it, and like that should be even more of a reminder. But here, like the story of the tzitzit hitting the guy who's going out with the prostitute. Like here, like the kippah fell off. You should have been like, oh, my kippah fell off. Instead of stealing from a date tree, I see my kippah fall off. Maybe.
Very good. Excellent pickup. I agree with you. I think this source might indicate, depending how literally we take it, a more metaphysical, spiritual understanding of kippah. It's not just a symbolical reminder that I see it and it reminds me to be a good person, right? Rather, it actually metaphysically, spiritually changes me. When the kippah is on me, I'm person A. When the kippah falls off, I'm just a different being. And it somehow it metaphysically, spiritually affects us. By the way, people think that Kabbalah is something that emerged after Talmudic times. Mysticism is something that happened after Talmudic times. If you read the Gemara carefully, you will see that there is tons of mysticism and metaphysical, spiritual ideas in the Gemara, different than, you know, the Kabbalistic, the Kabbalah that of Rav Aaron. But there's tons of mysticism in the Gemara. We will see these sources reflected in later halachic authorities. Okay, so keep this in mind. I think a more Kabbalistic understanding of kippah. Fine. But again, in terms of this source, is this a nice thing to do, or is this a chovah? Is this an obligation that every Jew must do? What do you guys think?
Nice.
Nice thing to do. Very good. Okay.
Is an obligatory thing, right?
Thus far, it's just a nice thing to do.
Okay, sorry.
All right. So far, so good for those who aren't so big on the kippah. But sorry to tell you this. There's more. Without the Shem. Okay. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman comes back in Shabbos Kuf Yud Chet. Okay? Titi Li. Give it up to me. Basically, this is one of those Gemaras that each rabbi is going around bragging about nice things that he did. Okay? Why did you merit long life? Because I did this and that. Gemara Megillah. So the Gemara Shabbos says, Rav Nachman, Titi Li, the Kayamta Gimel Sudos for Shabbat. Look at me. I had three meals on Shabbos. Which, by the way, that too, not so clear if it's an obligation or if it's a good thing to do. Halacha Maisa, the Shulchan Aruch says it is an obligation to have a third meal. How you have to have that third meal, bread or cake, whatever.
The phrase, give it up for me, literally translates.
Titi Li, look at me, I'm awesome. Give it up to me, something like that.
Titi is like to give.
Yeah, give it up. Yeah, it's
pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. Titi Li, the Kiyamte Yun Tfilo. Look at me, I daven extra long. Okay? Amar Rav Huna, brother of Yeshua. Rav Huna comes back. Give it up to me, because I never walked 6 feet, 4 amos, without with my head uncovered. Okay? So now, according to this Gemara, is this an optional thing, or is this a chiyuv?
Optional.
Why would you think it's optional?
Saying, see, the guys obviously don't do it.
If you're so pleased with me that you're doing it, then...
If he's bragging that he does it, then it seems to indicate that it's optional.
Yeah, the guys don't do it. So.
Right. But at the same time, we do know that some of these halachot, for example, Gimel Sudot, do end up being a real halacha. Right? Even later in the Gemara talks about that I always wore tefillin. Which this seems to clearly be a halakha, not just a custom. So there seems to be opening up a little bit more on clarity. Perhaps there is a more... obligatory nature indicated by this. Rano, but definitely you couldn't say that it's obligatory from this Gemara. It's just a little bit more unclear. Okay, just two more sources. The Gemara in Kiddushin Chavtet Amud Bet seems to indicate, you know, I'll quickly read it. Mishtabeach Rav Chizda Rav Huzda Rav Huna. Chizda praised Rav Huna again. But Rav Hamnuna, the Adam Gadalhu, he was an awesome guy. Why? Bring him to me. He's awesome. I want to meet this guy. When they looked at him, they saw that he didn't have a sudra, a head covering over his head. Why aren't you wearing a head covering? Because I'm not married yet. That's why I'm not wearing a kippah over my head. Okay?
You are married to God.
That's true. Okay, but just based on this Gemara, he's saying Rav Huna said, he asked, why aren't you wearing a kippah? I only start wearing a kippah when I get married. Or a head covering when I get married. So what does this indicate, guys? What does this Gemara seem to indicate?
You only have to wear a kippah when you get married.
It seems to me like there is a chiv when you get married. Okay?
I have a different approach.
Yeah.
I think your God awareness is heightened after marriage.
And therefore, you need to wear a kippah more.
No, that's just the kippah. We're operating under the premise that, like, the kippah is a symbol for God awareness, and
therefore, you would need it more when you're married. You only have to wear it when you're married.
No, marriage is a form of God awareness.
So then you shouldn't have to wear a kippah. So you should only wear a kippah until you're married. Right?
You only get to merit the kippah. Once you're married.
Okay, I like it. It actually works because we know married women only start covering their hair when they're married. So there might be something to that. I like it. I like it. It's good Kiddush. Now, the simpler understanding of this Gemara is that we're only talking about in the time of tefillah. You'll notice that many people... That many people wear a talis when they get married. That is a custom of Ashkenazic Jews. The Mishnah Berurah and other postim don't love this. They say you should always wear a talis. But you'll notice now that many people... they cover their head during Shemona Esrei, it's called Ituf, and they only start wearing the talis when they're married. And that's a real halacha. It's not just a nice thing for Kavana, but the Shulchan Aruch seems to indicate you should cover your head when you're davening your Shemona Esrei. So maybe that this source is only talking about in your Shemona Esrei, where there may be a halacha to cover your head, as opposed to just walking down the street when we may not need to wear a kippah. Okay, but again, this Gemara seems to indicate that it might have been more complicated. Okay, maybe it's already in the time of Rav Huna later in his life, it had evolved. And more and more people were doing it. Finally, the Gemara in Barachot Nun Aleph Amud Aleph mentions Ituf Rav Papa Me'atef Yatef Rav Asi Paras Sudra Al Reshei. They are talking about the customs of benching, and they mention that Rav Papa would always cover his head when he would bench. Okay, and this is a real halacha. So now again, where might we have to cover our head even if we're not covering our head while we're walking on the street? In Talmudic times, when would they be covering their head?
When they're
benching, which, or maybe at any time they're saying God's name, perhaps there's more of a halacha to wear a head covering. Okay, and I didn't bring it, which is my bad. But there's a Gemara in Masechet Sofrim, which also seems to indicate that there's a distinction when one is in the Beit Knesset or when one is saying a bracha, then when one is saying God's name, one must have more reverence. And therefore, one must put a kippah on his head, as opposed to in other situations when one would not have to put a kippah on his head. Okay, we're going to get back to that distinction, but those are the Gemaras thus far. Yes, questions?
Is there any idea of putting a kippah on when you specifically eat, like in addition to the bracha, that you should not eat without a kippah on? Specifically for eating or not?
I haven't heard anything about eating, only in terms of saying God's name. Okay, guys. It is 7:00, and I don't want to keep you waiting. It's such a bummer. So, Bezrat Hashem, next time we will get started right away, Bezrat Hashem, and we'll go through the post Talmudic era, the minhagim that have developed, and modern issues. All this part of the board. But in the meantime, don't take what I said halacha l'maisa. We're just talking Talmudically. We're just giving the background. In terms of the halacha l'maisa of kippah, you'll have to come next week.
As of now,
we know that in Talmudic times, it was a good thing to do.
All I know.
We had no idea about Shulchan
Aruch. Maybe when I stroll into my
Seder,
please do not. Oh wow, you both.
Next, we got minions.
That's it,
100%.
Awesome,
awesome. Amazing. Guys, that was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
That was good fun.
We have another Aaron piece your mind for keeping this late.
Chas v'shalom. He's a rebbe.
You're a rebbe.
No, we're all rebbes. We're all rebbes.